Hi, we've been joined in the studio today by Dr. Terry Simkin, who is the Senior Lecturer in Leadership and Corporate Education at Anglia Ruskin University. And she has come here to talk to us today about imposter syndrome. So probably the best place to start would be, what is imposter syndrome?
Firstly, you've never identified as a syndrome. It's actually a phenomenon, but I think phenomenon seems to roll off the tongue like a brick, and people tend to like the idea of saying something more easily. So the imposter syndrome it is. It was first developed or first identified in the 1970s by a lady called Pauline Rose Clance, and she looked at it in terms of high-achieving women. She had this research idea about why people at the top end of their game were actually feeling like frauds. And her research essentially encapsulated the idea that it is an intense feeling of intellectual fraudulence or phoniness. And it is often, and more often than not, in the face of objective measures of success. So you'll see these outwardly confident, highly successful people who have actually been objectively identified as highly functioning, highly successful, when they're still feeling that they're not worthy of that.
Is this something you came to from a place of personal experience?
Yeah, funnily enough, yeah. I remember sitting in my car once. I was just about to hand in my PhD. So I'd gone through a couple of degrees. I'd spent 5 years, investigating the topic that I was looking at. And I sat in my car for about half an hour, plucking up the courage to actually go and put this thing in, my thesis in, because I thought once I actually hand that in, then everyone's going to know I've been gaming them for the last 5 years, that I really shouldn't have been doing this in the first place. It was all I could do to get myself out of the car and actually hand this thing in for marking, because once it was out there and I would be exposed. And so I walked away thinking, oh my God, for the next 2 months I'm going to have to sit waiting on the marks to come in, and I know that they're going to come back saying, what were you thinking? How could you possibly believe yourself to be worthy enough to actually do this? As it happened, it came back really excellent. Right. It came back excellent. But that started me thinking, what is going on between my own ears, and indeed, is there a name for it, and are other people actually experiencing it?
The name imposter phenomenon seemed to sort of, or imposter syndrome as it is more commonly referred to, cropped up about 3 or 4 years ago. It suddenly started getting written about, maybe, even though you said it's from the 70s. Why do you think it's reared its head now?
That's a really good question. I think it's because people are starting...
I wasn't sure.
You can take that. I think it's because women are starting to examine reasons as to why perhaps we're not seeing women in on boards, on councils, in senior leadership roles. We know from research that women sort of get to middle management and tend not to make it into senior management. And I think there's a real examination of why that is. And of course, now we've got, just of late, the Me Too movement and a whole raft of other reasons to be looking at women's experience. But I think that there's a groundswell of interest as to why it is that we're not seeing women making the sorts of contributions that they could make because of, structural inefficiencies or societal expectations, or indeed women feeling perhaps not as confident as they could be. And I think that there's a lot of criticism around this idea that women aren't confident. My research suggests that women are confident. They're just butting up against societal expectations and workplace expectations that confirm that they shouldn't be in the positions that they're in.
So The word that you've used a lot there is women, and it does seem to affect women more. More women seem to think that they or feel like imposters.
Yeah, the jury's out on that. There's research that has come since that first research on high-achieving women. It's been done on men, managers, PhD students, people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and so there isn't evidence that suggests that women experiencing it more than men. I tend to think personally that it is experienced differently from men. And I think that's because, again, that we've got the gender double whammy. We've got, particularly in occupations where women traditionally weren't very visible, that they're coming up against workplace and societal expectations that are confirming their sense of being an imposter rather than challenging it, which they might not come across if they were in either more traditional occupations, or indeed if they were experiencing the workforce the way that men do. And we know that's different.
How common do you think it is?
Again, you know, there's research which suggests that about 70% of people will be experiencing it at some point in their career.
And that's so, men and women.
That's men and mm-hmm. women. But that's at some point. And, you know, it's difficult to identify it as imposter phenomenon rather than just plain self-doubt, which is fairly normal. My research suggests, and this is based on a sample of about 550 women from all over the world in STEM occupations, about 89% of them will be experiencing either frequent or moderate experiences of feeling like a phony.
It must be really damaging, because I think particularly if you're smart and you believe something, you look for stuff to back it up.
Yeah, and this is what I've been looking at in my research is that we go back to this idea of sense making. The way that we see the world comes from how we're taught about life from our parents and from school and from university and the world around us. And so sense making isn't based on reality or accuracy. It's based on what we think is plausible. And so if you're a sole woman in a highly male dominated environment, it's implausible that you should be there. And so our sense of sense making will fill in the gaps and make that imposter right.
Yeah.
So you're looking for things that actually back up your idea of being a fake.
Why can't we use that to back up our idea that maybe we should be there in the first place?
Because it's implausible.
Right.
Society says it's implausible that, you know, women should be astronauts. It's implausible that we should have, you know, 70% of women on boards globally. It's implausible because the numbers aren't there. We're not seeing it. Of course, it is. It's possible and mm-hmm. it's desirable. And there's no reason in terms of competence why women shouldn't be in these positions. But because we've not seen it, because historically, you know, we've not been in those sorts of positions, it's implausible.
We're socially conditioned.
They reckon that women won't apply for a job unless they hit a certain number of criteria, whereas men will just apply for a job if they think they can do it.
Even if it says it's for women only, the men will still apply for a job.
Yeah, I mean, it's said that, you know, women won't apply unless they've got 100% plus, yeah. And they'll make excuses as to why they shouldn't, whereas the experience of men is much less. They've got much more. And it's put down to confidence, but I don't think it is. I think it's if you're actually going to have to put yourself out there and be scrutinised, that you know, particularly if you're carrying around, you know, experiences of being an imposter, then you want everything to be ticked. And one of the characteristics of IP is this need to be right all the time, special and perfect. And none of those things exist in humans. It just doesn't
happen. That's my CV. You just have my CV out.
It's kind of interesting. Is there a difference because women basically, I feel like women are disproportionately told, no, you can't do that.
Quite possibly. I mean, the other thing is that it acts out in a type of cycle.
Mm.
So you end up sort of going through a range of behaviours which will just keep perpetuating themselves. And again, I don't think men necessarily feel it the same way that women do because of those societal expectations and a history that didn't have, you know, women's voices in it. If we're looking at the workforce, for example, it's really only in the recent past that we've actually seen women entering the workforce in any huge numbers. And so their experience of the workforce hasn't fed into the structures and processes that we use. And one of the people that I spoke to in my research basically said, when they're talking about performance management, which you would expect is a good place for somebody to actually get some really good feedback and to feel warm and fuzzy about their experiences and their successes and walk away thinking, oh, good, I'm good at what I do. Women were actually telling me, my boss doesn't know what I do, therefore any good feedback that he gives me, I have to discount because how would he know? Which just feeds into my sense of being an imposter again.
Yeah.
And so the workplace practices that we've set up for ourselves don't necessarily align with the way that people are coming to the workforce. It's we just exist in a world that doesn't, you know, stack up against the processes that we built for our workplaces 50 years ago. So coming back to your question, I think that men do come to it with a sense of I use the term advisedly, a sense of confidence than perhaps women have not necessarily developed. And I'm not suggesting that's all women, because, you know, it, again, in conversations with women, in their quiet moments, they could say, well, one woman actually said, logically, I know that I can take on the world, but I'm just waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder and tell me I'm a fraud. So there's this duality. There's this, I know I could actually do that job, but I'm not sure I'm going to necessarily be allowed to in the environment that I'm working with, or in the society that I'm engaging with. And that's really profound for me, because this idea of women not having confidence, that sort of shakes that a little bit, because I think it's not so much about confidence in themselves. They know they've got confidence in themselves. I knew I had confidence to get my PhD. It was, now that I've put it out to the world, is my capacity to engage with the world or make the world see that I'm capable enough, is that going to be good enough? Is what I've done there going to be good enough for that? And so it's not so much confidence, it's self-efficacy, the capacity to make other things work in concert with my own quiet confidence.
Because it's interesting as well, because you say about getting feedback from your boss. I mean, some people, and I am definitely one of them, just aren't particularly good at taking compliments. But that little part of your brain shuts off and you're like, oh, I find this excruciatingly embarrassing. I would actually at points rather be bollocked than I would be praised, because it's just really, to me, I just find it really awkward. So I suppose if my brain shuts off those bits, I'm not even taking in the good stuff. I'm just taking in the negative and not the hey, you are actually, other people might be telling me I'm doing a good job, but what I'm actually doing is not listening.
Yeah. And again, another participant basically suggested to me when I asked her, how do you accept, you know, positive feedback? And she said, my toes are curling just thinking about it. I can't do it. It's
so quite cold
uncomfortable
in here, but I am also doing that as well.
Like it cringing.
Cringing. Yeah. Well, and this is another key characteristic, that people who believe themselves to be imposters or frauds or fakes will automatically externalise that success. So they come up and say, oh, you did a really good job on that. Oh, no, it wasn't me, it was the team. Oh, no, I just got lucky. It wasn't down to my capacities. Oh, it was somebody else. It was something else. It was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And so there's this externalisation of that praise or success. But when it comes to failure, that's all mine. I did, you know, don't look at that bit because that's not quite right. And that bit, that didn't go as well as it should have.
And actually pointing it out as
identifying, because what you're doing is you're making your story right. My story is that I'm an imposter. So here's all this evidence to suggest that I'm not as good as you think I am.
So, Terry, how do we counter it within ourselves?
Help me, Terry. Terry, stop saying it was more by luck than judgment.
Going back to where these stories come from, really sitting down, having a good hard think about why is it that you're unable to take pride or to even just accept the praise or the compliments. Your childhood is a really good place to start. Having you think about how praise was and success was dealt with in the family. So was it something that was, you know, a positive experience for you?
Are we solving Hannah?
I don't know. Could you imagine? I might be in it. How much money do you want for this? You saved me a fortune.
Yeah, you haven't seen my invoice yet.
Someone compliment her and see what happens.
Note, identifying when that happens to yourself and don't go to what I call the confidence afterburn. It's when somebody says, you did a good job, your automatic reaction will be, oh, no, it was something else. Oh, I got lucky. I was in the right place at the time. What a fluke that was. Stop yourself from saying that and say, thank you.
Go on, try it.
Thank you.
It takes effort. And you know, sometimes examining what has gone on in your childhood and in perhaps your early life and schooling, and that can be really quite confronting for people, because it means that at some point or another, someone that you trusted to tell you the right thing about the world was actually not as good as they should have been.
Seriously, there's got to be a time where I can lock that box and never have to look in it ever again.
What else are you up to, Terry?
Out of the research, it was too valuable to just leave to an academic examination. And given that people were saying, like you, what can I do about this? I've been doing public lectures and working with women in STEM, so looking at how we can actually get more women and girls into STEM occupations, and going right back to kids in schools and working with kids in schools to get them to understand that, you know, it's not just about certain groups of the community you should be, you know, involved in this type of thing. But also I've got a website called Braver, Stronger, Smarter, which looks at programs or has developed a program to actually help women find out how it's actually come to be and what they can actually do about
it. .com, .org, .co.uk, .net.
Yeah, braverstrongersmarter.com.
That, I mean, it is so fascinating.
It has, I feel. Mm. I actually...
And I think you've cured Hannah. Yeah. And maybe you could just hang around afterwards and sort me out. That'd be great.